IOM Times Radio, IOM FM.
We are back with my guest, Neil Katz. Neil is a semi-retired, successful serial entrepreneur and former stockbroker with a passion for women's rights. He lives a life based on self-awareness and love, and practices yoga, meditates daily. He's taught A Course in Miracles, produced Oregon wines, enjoys reciting Vedic sutras, and writes his own inspirational poetry. Now, this Renaissance man has just brought out the first volume of the Victoria Woodhull Saga. Now, Victoria Woodhull is an extraordinary woman who rose from being abused and prostituted by her father to becoming the first female securities broker on Wall Street and a fiery campaigner for women's rights. Neil's inspired dramatization of Victoria's story serves to heighten awareness of the historical and continuing degradation and subjugation of women, as well as to expose the historical basis for the manipulation of the free markets of stocks, bonds, and commodities. This book absolutely saved my bacon on a very long trip, 24-hour trip through many airports, and I am so grateful to him for having written the book. And in fact, Neil has pledged 50% of the royalties from this book to a foundation for the empowerment and economic improvement of women, especially single mothers, that he formed in tribute to Victoria Woodhull and her passion for women's rights. And I might add that it is a fascinating and compelling read. Welcome, Neil.
Hi, Miriam. Thank you. And thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I'm delighted because I had never heard of Victoria Woodhull. This is such an extraordinary personality. How did you become aware of her?
Well, I was actually reading about another woman, Jane Addams, who established the Hull House in Chicago almost a generation later. And she kept referring to someone who inspired her, and it was Victoria Woodhull. Victoria Woodhull was the first woman to be invited to speak to Congress. And Jane's father at that time was a senator, and she may have even encountered her at that presentation to a committee of the Judiciary Committee. And then I read a book by one of the wonderful grand dames of literature and arts in America, Barbara Goldsmith, called Other Powers, which is a history of spiritualism and the women's movement, as well as, in general, Victorian times, primarily leading up to and post-Civil War and through the end of the century. And I became fascinated with her and was studying her. And I had the odd occasion to actually die in a hospital for a few minutes. And I've always been open to, spiritual or other sources. But Victoria started talking in my head. And she said I needed to write her story. She wants to come out of the obfuscation and the cover-up of her story, which was self-inflicted as well as intentional on behalf of some very, very powerful elements in America. And she wanted her story known because she thinks it's time for the dynamic change she encouraged back in the 1870s through the rest of her life till 1927. It's time for her to be iconic and lead the way, at least as a precursor and an example of what women can accomplish.
I cannot emphasize too much how absolutely fascinating her story has been and the grit. And it is what you call a historical novel. Why did you call it that?
Yeah, I didn't coin that phrase. I'm not sure who did. I know that Kathleen McGowan, who wrote a wonderful trilogy about the Magdalene tradition, references it in her book. I don't know if she created it or not. But the concept is that history has been written by men, primarily. Can go even further and say that history has been written by the survivors for the victors, or by the victors to impress the leaders of the victors. And the orientation is definitely a male worldview. The concept of her historical fiction is to see the world through a woman and her sensitivities and the way she perceives it. I guess the pinnacle or the highlight of the book is when she challenges Frederick Douglass in the offices of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, publishing The Revolution, their newspaper for the suffrage movement. She challenges Frederick Douglass that she can proclaim that she has no way of understanding the plight of being a Negro in America. Would he not give her the same courtesy, honor, and respect to declare that as a man, there was no way he could understand what she suffered as a woman in America? It's one of the pinnacle points in the book, and you'll have to tell me if it worked and was dramatic enough. But the idea is to view history from a woman's point of view.
What made you into a feminist?
I get asked that a lot. I
have to say that you speak in the book in Victoria's voice, and it is absolutely crystal clear that this is a female nurturing spirit, understanding the plight of the woman. I mean, getting into her skin and her mind must have been a challenge, but you must have had some kind of openness to be able to do that.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I tried to make it compelling, and sometimes it wasn't that much of an effort. There are whole passages where my hands flew across the keyboard. I think I tracked that at one point in time, I wrote almost 25 pages, or I'm sorry, 25,000 words in a 3 or 4 day period. And I was barely conscious. I mean, I think to some degree, Victoria helped write the book, at least in my mind. But the thing about feminism, I think I'm a humanist. I think I'm a person who believes that every single person should be respected and honored and loved, unless they do something to seriously challenge that, at which point you can choose not to. But you certainly don't wish them any ill. I think that's one of the true lessons in the Course in Miracles, is that we are created of God and we are made of love. And when we're able to maintain that focus, incredible miracles abound in your vision, and we're able to do things that we might not otherwise be able to do. So I think my being a feminist is because certainly there's an imbalance, and we need to have women respected and honored, cherished and exalted, to eventually balance the incredible imbalance that's been created. Ultimately, I really do believe, as does one of my mentors, Victor Villasenor, who's an accomplished writer in his series, The Reign of Gold, I really do believe that our salvation as a race is going to come from a feminine point of view. That doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a woman, but it will come from a feminine point of view. So for me, in part, being a feminist is to restore balance. And a male has to be just as much a feminist as, you know, a male energy, or the masculine energy. And here we get into the Jungian archetypes of the different qualities within a personality. But only from that balance can come true vision, true insight, true compassion, and the necessary change, the requisite change to move things forward.
And if we're talking about balance, certainly one sees in Victoria Woodhull the male warrior energy coming forth very strongly.
Yeah, she was astonishing. It's really a shame that she's not iconic. I think every fourth grader that takes home a assignment to learn about somebody and then represent them dressed like them or represent them to the class, I think that's in the fourth grade. I think both men and women, young boys and girls, should take Victoria Woodhull and quote some of her fabulous quotes. This woman was a true warrior. Thank you for saying that. She was undaunted and compelled. I hope that I have shown the psychological background and the reason she was so compelled, so directed to live the life that she did. And even in the darkest and with the most challenged path, she would remove any obstacle and overcome it. It's ultimately a story of incredible hope and accomplishment.
Absolutely. What historical documents were you able to access that gave you such detailed background?
Oh, amazing. The internet today, I could have never done this without computers and the internet. I've been to many university libraries and New York public libraries. Absolutely astonishing, and I owe them a great deal of debt. So I've seen original documents. Of course, their own literature, they were prolific in both newspaper print as well as publishing their own first woman-owned newspaper. And the quotes from that are amazing. Also, there's been about six or seven histories written about Victoria and her incredible sister, who we shouldn't leave out, Tennessee Celeste Claflin, who led a remarkable life and ends up living like a queen in south of Lisbon and married to Lord Cook, one of the richest men in Europe. That's after being the paramour of the richest man in America, Cornelius Vanderbilt. But Tennessee is just as important. The amount of prints still available and current stories, extemporaneous stories, is pretty voluminous. So I had a lot of material to work through. I just want to add that I would check in with Victoria pretty regularly, asking her to appear in my sleep. And after I'd written about 150 pages, I asked her what she thought of my work. And she said, "Well, you're missing the most important part of my life." And I said, Wait a moment.
We're going to have to get to that most important point in your life right after this break. We do have to take a break, but then you won't want to miss the rest of this interview. Stay with us.
Feed your soul with Waves of Consciousness on OM Times Radio. Join Elliot Jolish, the business therapist, each Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern for the Elliot Jolish Hour, as he interviews business experts on your behalf. And you're invited to email your business questions to questions@ecjgroup.com for answers, live, on air, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Elliot Jolish Hour. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Medium Lisa Phoenix, Mediumship Messages and Musings, explores mediumship and all things metaphysical. Lisa Phoenix invites you to reach above and beyond your everyday experiences to explore new dimensions in the spirit world. She will do live readings to connect callers to their loved ones in spirit, shares engaging stories and teachings from her own personal experience, and will have intriguing conversations with other mediums, spiritual teachers, and healers to help you understand the metaphysical world so you can connect to these forces in your day-to-day life. Join your host on this magical and metaphysical journey into the world of spirit every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
With Neil Katz, the author of Outrageous, the Victoria Woodhull Saga, and we've been talking about his first volume, Rise to Riches. Neil, just before the break, first of all, is there a website that people can go to?
Oh, thank you for asking. Yes, if you go to Amazon and type in Outrageous, Rise to Riches, the book is available in Kindle form at pre-release price of $2.99. It will be double that or more once it's released. So you can reserve your copy for $2.99 at Kindle. It's Outrageous, Rise to Riches, or you can type in NEALKATZ. The website for the book is www.thevictoriawoodhullsaga.com. And there's a lot of information on the website. I hope it's used as a platform for people to do some familiarization and get to know the subject matter. And as you know, Miriam, because we've talked about it, it also identifies the charitable work that I want to conduct.
Absolutely. Well, just before the break, you were talking about Victoria's inspired communication with you, saying that you had missed the main point. What was it?
Well, she did this a couple times, but the primary thing she told me in the beginning of writing was I wasn't paying anywhere near enough attention to her sister. She was 7 years younger, stunningly beautiful. Victorian Press, in their being prude and proper, even identified her as entering a room with her prodigious breasts preceding her. They were so consumed and with the image of her physicality. This young woman at age 23, 24, beguiled or fell in love with Cornelius Vanderbilt, the richest man in America, who was 74 at the time. That love affair led to the gold scandal of 1869. And it's a wonderful opportunity to see the problems, the inherent systematic problems of free capital markets that still exist today and certainly existed then. And it's the book incorporates, as you know, a full expose of the gold scandal of 1869, which was the near total collapse, worse than even 2007, 2008, of the U.S. economy. And in the end, Ulysses S. Grant sends Vanderbilt a telegram asking him to intercede, not knowing that Vanderbilt was fully complicit in creating the problem. And he ends up being called the savior of America, saving the economy, and really one of his last grand roars or hurrahs as a 74-year-old man. He was going to die about 7 years later. But what Victoria told me was pay more attention to Tennessee. And I started doing that, and the book got a lot better. And I would often consult with Victoria. And, you know, I guess some people could call me certifiable for saying that. But I really believe there's so much more communication that we have access to. And probably your audience appreciates that more than most. But we have so much more capacity than our limited scope, the typical definition of ourselves, allows. When we open up to this, the levels of creativity, the levels of profundity that we can accomplish and really effect true change is just astonishing.
I would like to point out that both sisters themselves were highly intuitive and, in fact, gave some pretty profound readings during their lifetimes. And their intuitive abilities, I would imagine, helped them quite a bit in moving into the circles, first of all, in surviving their horrible childhood, but moving into the circles that were absolutely at the pinnacle of power. I mean, they were playing in the big leagues. They were hobnobbing with J.P. Morgan and Cornelius Vanderbilt, you know, the poet Walt Whitman. This is an absolutely astonishing story.
Yes, they both developed clairvoyance at a very young age. They made it their living for a long time. And Victoria herself served three terms, consecutive terms, as president of the American Spiritualist Society. Mm-hmm. Both of them were renowned spiritualists, and Victoria and Tennessee would often identify to the curious, you know, how could they know what they did and how to place their bets, if you will, or their purchases in the stock market. And Victoria would say she consults with the spirits. That was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because the way they really made their fame and fortune, without giving the whole book away, is that they organized a information system and provided unique and unknown information to Vanderbilt. She was really one of the first people to capitalize on what we would call today the information age.
Indeed. You have to read the book, because this is absolutely delicious.
It is fun, isn't it?
It is. What was your biggest surprise writing this book?
The complexity of human nature. I asked Victoria, when I would be writing about another character, to summon him and let me interview them, him or her. And when I did this, I was always amazed at how complex and diverse people were. The true deep motivations of a Cornelius Vanderbilt, who basically established the American mythos. I mean, this guy was a dirt farmer that ended up, by great magnitudes, the wealthiest man in America, building empires and creating the business model of the outrageous entrepreneur who would dare and risk everything to accomplish his focused goal. So interviewing Cornelius Vanderbilt, interviewing the very famous, most famous man in America at the time, the Reverend Henry Ward Beecher, and finding out their true motivations astonished me. It also left me with a message, I think, especially to younger people who read the book, that people are not a soundbite. People are not a terse phrase summation. It's a lot more complex than that. There's only one real, almost single-dimensional character, because he was basically evil with no saving, no salvation, no saving grace. And that was her father. He was a bad, bad guy. And sort of is the prototype for all the abuses of women from the male sex. So I think the lesson, more than anything, was the surprise was not only the complexity, but the actual reasons that people did things, which get revealed throughout the course of the book.
Well, I cannot wait for the next volume. Are you into it already?
Yeah, I'm about 150 pages into it. It should be released by the spring or summer of the coming year. And thank you for saying that. I hope the saga continues. I hope we get a TV show, because I think this is something that should be iconic and important in America. It would make a wonderful series.
It begs for a BBC television treatment.
You're showing your British background there. Yeah, it would be great.
What's true is true.
Yeah, BBC or even some of the high quality HBO or Showtime. Uh-huh. But yes, that level. It's certainly a Downton Abbey type story.
Absolutely. Now, you yourself have an impressive background in both business and finance. Certainly, that informed your ability to make such sense out of the different streams of economic machinations that were going around in the 1800s. It's almost like history has come full circle, both with the interest in spirituality and also the manipulations of the financial sector, and also of the tremendous, I would say, perilous state of the economy. What do you think we can do about it?
Well, and I'd add that absolutely we've come full circle, and the the third leg of that stool is the women's movement and gender equality, represented by the He for She Foundation, the United Nations Movement for Gender Solidarity.
And the fact that we have two female candidates for the presidency.
Yes, absolutely. By the way, just a side note, I'd like a feminine candidate for the presidency, not necessarily a female candidate, but that's a whole different distinction. I just want to say that what we can do about it is learn from history and understand how things got started and how we can change them. And that's part of the reason I want to do the charitable foundation. I want to establish this concept of credit funding. And the goal is to demonstrate to America how we can help women to help themselves, help them lift themselves up by their own bootstraps by giving them opportunity, but then having them responsible to help the next person in line. And that's outlined on the website under the foundation button. There's links to it. We hope to do a reality show and actually make visible to America and prove the point that single women are our best investment and highest grade investment that we're capable of making in America.
Hear, hear. And again, thanks. The website is thevictoriawoodhullsaga.com. We have been speaking with Neil Katz, the author of Outrageous, The Victoria Woodhull Saga. Please join us next week when we will have more rising stars of the new consciousness. Until then, I'm Miriam Knight. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.